A look back by Glass now. The first pitch swing and a high fly ball. Right center field. It is well hit. Kiermaier back. It's gone. He hit it into the Dodger bullpen. And Cody Bellinger has given the Dodgers a 2-0 lead. Mookie Betts, the first batter that Fleming faces, and Betts sends a fly ball to right field. It's pretty well hit. It's carrying. It's gone. And the Dodgers, behind a great performance from Clayton Kershaw, another home run from Cody Bellinger, and then they pour it on in the middle innings, and they win game one, 8-3.
I have absolutely no idea who my co-host is this morning.
I trimmed up the beard.
Oh, you shaved it off. You didn't trim it. You shaved it.
No, it's a trim. No, I still haven't shaved. It's been over a year since I've shaved. It's been a long time. I don't think I've shaved maybe once in the last year for an event. That's it. The beard got to the point where it's itching and I just didn't want to muscle through it. It takes like for me 2-3 weeks, that point where you have to actually, you know, it starts to itch a little bit. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
I didn't want to go through that. So it's trimmed it down. So here I am.
Well, cause once you get past the itchy phase, then you feel like you've struggled and slogged through the worst part. And now you've just got to let it grow. And then at some point it becomes out of control.
Well, then you keep it. Once you get to that point, you don't want to keep it around, or you do want to keep your beard. If you do get through those 3 weeks, you're just like, I put all this effort in. I'm not taking it out now. So that's usually what happens when I do get the big. Do you know what I don't like about the beard? Do you get like? dry skin with it, is that just me? I feel like that's everybody, and it's kind of, I don't really want to talk about this.
Are you talking about like face dandruff? Because that's what dandruff is dry scalp. So you're talking about,
yeah,
when you scratch your beard and skin comes out, you get face dandruff. You get face dandruff.
I didn't want to talk about that this morning though, so I'm not talking about that. But that's what you get.
Be a nice garnish on your cereal in the morning. Shake it out right over your Cheerios.
My God. You can't wear anything dark. Like you can't wear a dark shirt or jacket because then it's disgusting. I'm not talking about that.
I mean, there's just no perfect meet in the middle point for you. Just as your hair on your head is falling out so that you have no more head dandruff, you're growing a beard and your head dandruff is being replaced by your face dandruff.
Am I the only one that deals with that?
Text us to 590.
Oh.
Silent Vic is, you got face dandruff?
He gets it too, okay. Because I've seen people get it. Like you see people with the goatee or the beard, and they have it all over themselves. And you're just like, that's just disgusting.
Well, we could open up a Wednesday grooming tips. We'd ask Berkey about it too, although he's always clean shaven. I don't know if he...
Yeah, he always shaves.
He wouldn't be down for the face dandruff conversation, I don't think.
No, I've never seen him with a goatee or a stash or anything. But he doesn't. No, he doesn't do the, you know, he comes from the Lou Lamoriello school where it's clean shaven, right?
Yeah. We should ask Berkey. We ask him the hard hitting questions. We're into the off season now.
Do you want to open it up with him? Okay.
Well, open it up. When was the last time you had two days growth?
It's going to be 3 days. It's going to be. It's going to be a one-word answer. Never. And that's going to be it. You're going to get never and not one more word.
And,
trust me.
And why am I on?
He's not going to have it.
Why am I on with you two idiots so bright and early in the morning?
Is that what he said?
No. I misquoted him a couple weeks ago, and he corrected me. He put, because I said, Berkey said that this is... the thing he most looks forward to each week is coming on our show. And he said, I never said that. And then we rolled the tape and it was not anywhere close actually to what he said. So then I felt like I was spreading some fake news. Well, so much for our Ilya Mikheyev talk yesterday. Amazing.
What did you think? Did we not call that?
You know what? I'm happy as a Leafs fan, from the Leafs perspective, I'm happy that he's locked in for 2 years, because then you know what you've got. You don't have to do this dance again next summer, right? You don't have to wonder whether Ilya Mikheyev is going to have a 30-goal season and therefore command X amount of dollars. You got him locked in. You got him locked in for 2 years, and that allows you to budget with him in the fold for the 2021-2022 season.
Yeah, he was asking for 1 year at 2.7. The Leafs were offering, we're going into ARB at $1 million for a two-year deal per year. $1 million per year for 2 years. And we talked about it yesterday. You're like, what do you think he's going to get? Just under two. One and change, high ones. And that's what he got. So I just didn't see this going to, you don't go to arbitration over a deal like this on both sides. If you're the Leafs, you get a guy, you bring him over from Russia, and you don't want to nickel and dime guys, especially that aren't making a lot of money. You're $1 and $2 million guys. I understand every 100,000 counts in a cap system. At least that's what I've been told when I was negotiating. Maybe the general managers were just using that to get me a lower number.
Every 100K counts.
Every 100K. And I'm just like thinking, I'm like, okay, that guy makes 9 million. That guy makes 8.7 million. I'm like, you just can't give me, you know, 100 grand over the minimum.
You know how many people can relate to 100 grand counts? Almost everybody.
I just don't understand how you throw money around. It's just like you give, you know, the $4, $5, $8, $9, $10 million. You just throw it against anyone. And then you have teams will go to great lengths to like pinch the lower guys.
Well, because they got to slip it in under the cap, right?
I just don't get that kind of stuff, though.
Are you saying this? This would typically go on before the salary cap era as well.
Yeah, even before. I mean, I've seen teams just from other players telling me about contract negotiations where a team won't budge 10 grand for a guy in the minors. It's like, no, I'm not giving you 60. You're getting 50. And they make him wait. But they just signed like six guys for 4.5 million and didn't even.
Yeah, I think sometimes, Ziggy, it comes down to, and I can't believe I'm taking the side of ownership or the front office. That's so unlike me. But I think sometimes it comes down to precedent. So if I give...
Yeah, you're right. There's some truth in that.
If I give player A 60 grand to play in Lowell, well, if player B, player C, and player D are making 45 or 50, they're going to come to me and say, well, I'm as good or better than player A. I should be making 60 or 65 or 70. And then that $10,000 becomes 40 or 50 or $60,000 on your minor league team. That's the way that I look at it. I'm always pro player, but that would be the devil's advocate position.
That situation though I'm talking about, that's actually the owner or owner's family that's doing the negotiating. So that can be a little dangerous, right? you know, Jason Karmanos is not with her. Well, Hurricanes sold, but back then he was, you know, the chief operating officer.
You could see Tom Dundon maybe doing the same thing in this day.
He's doing the same thing, right? He's got his hand in all the negotiations, right? And that can be dangerous for the owner. You have to be really careful. So you're too close, right? Almost like if I was owning an NHL team, I would not be in on any of the negotiations. None. I don't want to know anything. You're the GM, president, you deal with it. I don't want to know.
Here's your budget.
Yeah.
Here's your, you know, whatever it is, $81.5 million cap, we work to that, or we work to $75 million for player payroll.
Or whatever.
You pay our 23 guys $75 million, and you apportion it out how you see fit. And if the team is good, everybody's happy. And if the team sucks for a couple years in a row, I'm probably going to fire your ass. That's it.
Because then you're too close and you're just like, I'm going to negotiate this guy $500,000 cheaper. That's $500,000 in my pocket if I'm the owner. But once you start doing that, or I mean, there's so many situations that are crossing my mind on, you know, different things when owners get involved. Just, you know, stay, you have to stay out of it. It's, but yeah, with Mikheyev, hey, that's, you just, you don't want to do it. It just, it, even from a player standpoint, right? You have a team gives you a chance, right? What other team was giving Mikheyev a chance before this? Did anybody want him? So the Leafs give a guy a chance. You don't go to arb with him, especially 1.6, 2 million, 2.7. Like, he was asking for 2.7. He probably thought he was worth 2. The Leafs went in at 1. They probably thought he was worth 1.3, 1.4. And he signed, what, 1.6 and change?
Right. And I look at Mikheyev, right? He had 8 goals in 39 games before that horrifying injury. So if you prorate that over 82, well, that would be 16 goals in 78 games. So you're looking at about 17 goals over 82. And if you're paying a guy 1.645 for that, I'm happy with that, especially considering that Kasperi Kapanen, he didn't hit 20 goals last year, and he was making 3+. So you're trying to
It'd
find...
be nice if it's a good, that's good though. That's, I mean, that's a great point. You'd love Mikheyev to turn into Kapanen. That would be, that's, this is the exact situation in this cap era. Now the pandemic, cap is flat. These are the kind of moves you need. You can say everything else. All we can talk, sit here and talk about what's going on in that. And Anderson needs to be better in, you know, these situations, these game seven do or die situations. But what it's going to come down to this team, and I know the big four need to show, you know, they need to be more consistent. They need to show up in the playoffs. We need more of them. Like, I know all those narratives, right? Those are the two big ones, the big four and Anderson. But what's really going to change this team, one of them, one of the big areas, is situations that you just brought up. You lose Kapanen. Can Mikheyev come and do what he did for his contract on 1.6, under half of what Kapanen was making? What was Kapanen at? 3.5, right? Or three something.
Less than 3.5, but yeah, right in that neighborhood. And same with Andreas Johnsson. Same with Andreas Johnsson.
Yeah, they're both in the three and changes, right? Like, so that's what you need. But that's going to be the reality. That's going to be life for the Toronto Maple Leafs going forward. Can we shed those contracts, bring somebody in for half, and we need the same performance? But it's easier said than done, Scotty. It's a lot to ask of Mikheyev at this point. I think he can do it. But I was high on Kapanen. I the penalty killing, you can throw him on the power play. He gets pucks. He can score. You can play him with top guys. I mean, Pittsburgh traded a first rounder for him. Good player. I think the Leafs are going to notice Kapanen not on this roster. I know he had a rough year last year, wasn't as consistent. He's going to be missed.
He's a trusted penalty killer. He can fly.
Yeah. The speed, but McCabe's got the speed. I like Kapanen's game. I'm not saying he's going to go to Pittsburgh and like light it up. Even if they do put him with Crosby, I think he's in for a tougher year than people think with Crosby. It's not easy to play with him. I know he's one of the best all time. It's just finding chemistry with players just doesn't happen. Even when you're with the best players in the league, some guys fit, some guys don't. You know, we talk about all the players that, you know, that are average players, and then you put them with Crosby and all of a sudden they're these superstars. You know, when I was there, you know, the name that comes to mind is like a Pascal Dupuis, a Kunitz, right? These were good players, and then all of a sudden you put them with Crosby and they're incredible, but that chemistry just doesn't happen. There has to be something there where both players can work with each other. So I don't think just Kapanen is just going to, here's Sidney Crosby, go ahead. If it's not happening after 7-8 games, he's not going to be playing with Crosby. So
they'll move him off. But just
yeah.
back to the Leafs situation, and look, I'm on dailyfaceoff.com right now, which doesn't mean anything in the middle of the offseason. But they've got Mikheyev up with Tavares and Marner right now. So if we accept that and we accept the third line for what it is on dailyfaceoff.com, which we don't necessarily, but that's how they're drawing it.
That's a great, you know what? That's a great website.
Yeah.
Actually, I do like them. Yeah, they update it pretty quickly.
And
yeah.
Kerfoot, Simmons, and Robertson form the third line right now, Ziggy. Last year, what was one of the things we talked about with the Maple Leafs last year? That third line of Kerfoot, Kapanen, and Janssen. And we know that there were some health issues for some of the players there, Janssen in particular. But they were making more than $11 million combined. Kerfoot's $3.5 million. Simmons is $1.5 million on a one-year deal. That's $5 million. And Robertson's on his entry level, and he's in the 820 range on the cap. That's a $5.8 million third line that could provide you similar productivity to what an $11-plus million third line provided you last year.
I'm not so sure that Robertson's going to make the team.
Well, no, I know, but I'm talking about what's on Daily Faceoff
today.
Yeah,
I know. He's going to have to earn his spot. I'm not a great player. I just, for the Leafs to be successful, he's going to have to go out and earn it. If they give him the spot, the Leafs are in trouble. There you go. That's, I don't know how else to put that, but that's, if he's just on the team automatically, there's just something not right. You want competition. Look what's going on in the back end right now. They don't know. They don't know who the six are. That's what you need. You need, every good team I've played on, there's competition. Guys have to go out and earn it. It doesn't matter who you are. You want to be one of the best? Earn your power play time. Don't just have guys go out. I love when teams and coaches throw out second units more, or sometimes don't even play the first unit. They come out, have a bad one, they miss the next one. When you have that, when you have players you can throw out, that's when your team and your organization is better. And we talk about the depth on the Leafs. The depth is building. In the back end, you can really see it. Up front, the third line, I mean, Kerfoot's going to be in the third line center. Everyone wants Robertson there. I get it, but I think Kerfoot's going to be on a shorter leash than people think. And Spezza and Thornton, if their bodies are moving, if their feet are good, I'd watch out, because I think they're going to get thrown in that spot a lot quicker than people think if it doesn't work out with Kerfoot. I love Kerfoot's game, though.
Brian Burke will be our guest at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into some of this, and we'll also talk to him about his book. We talked about it yesterday with Stephen Brunt, who co-wrote it or oversaw it. The book is Burke's Law, A Life in Hockey. So that's at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Adnan Virk at 8:30 from the MLB Network, NHL Network, the GM Shuffle podcast. We've got a treat for Adnan at the end of his segment. Mm. That's when Hugh and I...
What's the treat?
...are going to drink the sheep...
Oh, it's happening today.
It's happening today. Silent Vic.
Okay.
Silent Vic went to approximately 17 upper-end grocery stores. Out of the goodness of his heart, by the way.
Don't sound like it's bougie. Can I say bougie? Oh,
yes, you can say bougie.
Okay.
It's
a little bougie.
I was at a reputable, wonderful, originally Ottawa-based grocery store yesterday, part of a chain, and I went and found one of the people who worked there, and I politely asked if he had any sheep kefir.
You went to Ottawa yesterday for this?
No. It's an Ottawa chain. It's Farm Boy. I love Farm Boy.
Oh, that's from Ottawa?
Yeah, it's an Ottawa chain. Oh,
no way.
They've had 6 or 7 farm... yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You went to Ottawa for
could you imagine?
No.
I wouldn't go down the street for the
you
kefir.
Wouldn't go to Whole Foods for 3 minutes.
That was a 28-minute walk per my GPS.
And went to Whole Foods?
And an 8-minute
drive. Or went to Farm Boy?
I went to Farm Boy and I asked, and the person working there told me that they only had cow kefir. And so I thought, okay. So then I was texting back and forth with Silent Vic, and I said, hey, look, if you're on your way home and you can stop in, I'll, you know, let me
know. It's like $10 for that little container. You're not. It's not cheap.
You know why I didn't know that? It's never occurred to me.
It's expensive.
Kefir.
Well, there's like 2 million probiotics in it.
You just said don't call it bougie.
Actually.
And then it's bougie. $10.
Honestly, I had a buddy yesterday text me and say, or DM me and said, there's not a million probiotics, there's 20 million. So you're missing out on 20 million probiotics
all
per cup.
Well, there's somewhere out
that's
there.
That's special.
Somewhere out there, a germaphobe is tweaking at the notion that there's 20 million or 20,000 somethings.
20 million.
20 million
20
somethings.
Million. Yeah.
And this feels like it's going to be a very small jug. So $10 for one squirt of a sheep's teat.
There's got to be at least, I'm going to say there's probably four cups in each jug. So there's 80 million probiotics per jug. It's pretty good.
Well, we'll find out. Hugh, I got to say, Hugh Burrell is more worried than I am. I'll just suck it up. I mean, look,
it's not bad. As long as you don't flavor it and it's not cow. You're doing it.
We've all had that moment where we accidentally poured a little sour milk on our cereal. Like if it's sour milk, I'll chase it with some coffee or water.
Yeah, chase it with something else. I'm just happy you're doing it at the end of the show, not the start, because that could be not good for me.
Well, we want Adnan.
I was here by myself.
We want Adnan
and Silent
here.
Vic.
We want Adnan here. We want Adnan here because he's been in on the sheep kefir talk, and it's, I'm sure, an important part of his week. And look, if Hugh barfs, I think we got to take bets on whether...
Well, you've got the plastic up, so you're safe, right?
Yeah. I've got they're vinyl barriers.
Sorry, vinyl barriers.
They're not...
Shower curtains.
They're not... No. Yeah, they're not at all shower curtains with the magnets on the bottom and the shower curtain look.
In case something happens, you're protected.
I'm protected. The Dodgers all over the Rays in game one of the World Series last night. Man, you know, it must be, there's nothing I like better than chiding Boston. Mookie Betts could have been a Boston Red Sox for life.
Why do you think, like, what was the reasoning behind moving him, though? Were they just not going to be able to afford him, or? Like,
I think they realized that they weren't, I think it deteriorated enough that they realized they weren't going to be able to sign him. Here's what happens, and you see it around sports sometimes. I don't think, Ziggy, this is totally unlike the Alex Pietrangelo situation with the St. Louis Blues. Mookie Betts is looking around, and J.D. Martinez. Now, J.D. Martinez was an important part of their 2018 World Championship, but they brought him in as a free agent, paid him big dollars to be their designated hitter. Chris Sale, who missed this year because he underwent Tommy John surgery, was also a big part of their 2018 World Championship. But he, after they acquired him from the Chicago White Sox and he helped them to win the World Series, he started to have arm problems. He's got a sling delivery from the side. He's a left-hander, stud pitcher, Cy Young caliber guy. But despite the arm troubles, they went and they gave him a 5-year extension at $145 million. And all of a sudden you're dotting the diamond with really expensive pieces and you haven't yet locked Mookie Betts in on that career contract. And the owner starts to say, we gotta get underneath the luxury tax threshold. Because if you are over the luxury tax threshold, you pay significantly into revenue sharing. And the more years consecutively that you're over the luxury tax threshold, the more the percentage that you pay into revenue sharing increases. So you're penalized. So teams like to get under the luxury tax threshold, which I think, again, 2020 being a screwed up year with the pandemic, but I think was in the $210 million neighborhood this year. They like to get back under that in order to reset because owners don't like paying 40, 50, 60 extra million dollars to all the other teams because you happen to spend more than 205 or 210.
Mm-hmm.
And the Betts deal was going to be 35 mil or per year or whatever it turned out to be. And, you know, the Red Sox did this with John Lester they weren't going to give him a 12-year contract. He's a pitcher. But they lowballed John Lester early in 2014, and he said, screw you. They ended up trading him to Oakland. He helped the Athletics make the playoffs, and then he signed a massive deal with the Chicago Cubs in the offseason, 2014 into 2015. So they have a history with a drafted and developed player of doing this to that guy. How Mookie Betts, though, was not the priority is unbelievable to me. And there really is no excuse. If you're a small market team, fine. But if you're the Boston Red Sox, there's no excuse. No excuse.
Who's a better player? Who's better Mike in the Trout. Playoffs right now? Who's better in the playoffs right now?
I thought you were going to ask who's better, Mike Trout or Mookie Betts.
Mike Trout's good, but you want Trout over Mookie Betts?
Yes. I want Mike Trout is the best player in the world, and it's indisputable.
Man, but Mookie Betts, everything. It's just the way he goes after the game, everything about him is, I don't know who's better. I mean, defense, the way he works. He steals bases. He hits home runs.
Mike Trout does all those things. We just don't get to see him do it because the team he plays for sucks.
Well, you know what I think about regular season and postseason? It's the players in the postseason that get things done, Scotty.
Mike Trout.
And Mookie Betts is the man.
The Mike Trout situation in baseball would be the equivalent of LeBron James never making the playoffs in the NBA.
Well, you know what I think about that then? I wouldn't think very highly of LeBron James, but he's got a lot of rings.
I wouldn't think very highly of LeBron James. And that's it. I've got nothing more to say on that. I think baseball's losing out huge that Mike Trout's not in the playoffs each and every year. But I'm not taking anything away from Mookie Betts. As I always say, if we have a debate about who's the best player in the sport, it doesn't diminish the person you think is number two. Because if you think he's number two to the guy who's number one, it's not an insult. Adnan Virk at 8:30, Brian Burke at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Kevin Barker, coach Kevin Barker.
Do I call him coach from now on? So when he comes on, I'll do it though.
Yeah.
I'll do coach.
You call him coach.
So like coach, and I'll come with the next question. You go Barker, I'll go coach.
We'll get it singing with Kevin Barker at 7:30. Hugh Burrell has sat down, T-minus 2 hours and approximately 15 minutes until he may or may not barf drinking the sheep kefir. We will Burrell the lead with Hugh next. Kevin Barker, Brian Burke, Adnan Virk all ahead on the program. Play a little yay or nay. How about mutiny in Cowboys land? How about them Cowboy?
Interesting. How about that?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Yeah, we got it, buddy.
Huber. You got it in there?
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's the lead. I don't know if we should be Burrelling this lead. It's the lead. Let's Burrell the lead with you.
All right, boys. Good morning. Game one of the World Series goes to the Dodgers 8-3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. Clayton Kershaw was brilliant. 8 strikeouts over 6 innings. He now has 201 postseason Ks, passing John Smoltz for second most all-time. He's just 4 behind Justin Verlander's 205.
I kept us in it long enough there for them to break it open in the 4th or 5th, whatever inning that was. And, you know, I was fortunate to make it through that first. You know, I was bouncing my slider like 48 feet and didn't quite make the adjustment until the second inning. So I'm fortunate to make it through that. But, you know, really after the first, you know, felt pretty good with everything.
So this is the Clayton Kershaw that people should be afraid of in the postseason. He hasn't had a whole lot of postseason success, but man, he's going to pitch again in this series. And that's bad news for the Rays if he's anything like he was last night.
I'm one of those Kershaw guys who believes that his October reputation isn't fair to him. It doesn't mean he's been dominant. That's not what I'm saying. But I think he's gotten a bad reputation, and a lot of that has had to do with the fact that he's had to pitch too deep into games too often because the Dodgers have never really had a good bullpen outside of the 2 or 3 years where Kenley Jansen was completely and totally dominant. So this is great for him. Mookie Betts was brilliant last night as well. A great start for the Dodgers, but don't count out the Rays.
Yeah, you're speaking of Mookie Betts. I heard you guys talking about him a few minutes ago. He had a great game. Stole two bases, belted a solo shot in the sixth inning. Betts said he was prepared to do whatever it took.
I like winning, so whichever one is needed that day, you know, I'll try and do that. But, you can't do just one. You have to do both.
So Betts is putting up all these numbers, and he's playing the way he does, and he's not a big guy. Like, Mookie Betts is a rather diminutive fellow.
He's 5'9".
Yeah, he's 5'9",
like 170.
There's not a whole lot of meat on that bone, but he continues to stand on his head and do these incredible things. You're right. Boston should never have let that guy walk. Tony Gonsolin tonight for the Dodgers. Blake Snell for the Rays. Game 2, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Super villain, super agent, Scott Boras, says a neutral site for the World Series is a great idea, which would lead to more pageantry, which is hard to produce at two separate sites in two different cities. You guys on board for the World Series neutral site?
No.
No? Why not?
Because I like home fans. I don't we think that home field advantage is part of the fun? You know, this isn't a one-off. This isn't a Super Bowl where you're playing a championship game at a defined site. Then it becomes overly corporatized and just an event for whoever. Like, if not that Toronto ever would be.
Oh, no.
But imagine a Oakland San Diego World Series at Rogers Center.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Well, first of all, they'd never give the neutral site to Toronto.
I understand that. But my point is if your team is in the World Series, you want to have the opportunity, if you can, to go to the game, or you want to be outside the stadium watching on a big screen.
Yeah.
It's a civic thing. It's a terrible idea.
The team's played a 162-game season. They should be rewarded with having home fans at least three or four of their games. Right, Zig?
Yeah, I don't mind the one game, right? Super Bowl, I think you have to do that for the NFL. But in a best of seven, I don't see how you can do it in an offsite. Neutral site, I guess.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you have to go back and forth. There's a little bit of travel involved. You get your home fans there. I don't see it happening. I'm surprised Boras would say that. There's got to be some kind of reasoning behind it.
I mean,
there's got to be some bigger. But there's got to be some kind of bigger reason. He's not just going to spit that out without a good reason. So,
MLB commissioner Rob Manfred says he'd like to keep a couple of the rules adopted in this pandemic shortened season. He likes the extra inning rule where a runner starts at second in the 10th inning, and he also likes the expanded playoff format. 16 teams this year, he'd like 14. You think those two rules stick around? I love the extra inning rule. Love it. Great. Don't want to see an 18-inning game. There's nothing in it for me. I like get this thing over with in 10 or 11 innings.
Yeah, I guess that's what happened a lot in a regular season. I would just say that you have a runner starting in scoring position. If you can get him to third with just one out, you're likely to score. So a 2-2 game could be a 3-3 game after the 10th inning, could be a 4-4 game after the 11th. I don't know. I think he's got bigger issues on his hand with the direction this sport has taken, and I don't think that those are issues he can solve.
Mm-hmm.
The high velocity, the lack of action, the obsession with home runs, strikeouts, walks, the three batter rule for relief pitchers. None of that has had any effect on quickening these games. The issue is the way the game is played today, and you cannot litigate strategy. You cannot outlaw velocity.
Well, we've talked about this before on this show. One of the things that, to me, is a huge detriment to the game is the shift. It takes away so much offense. There's an easy way around that. You have to have two fielders on either side of second base, period. That's the rule.
I just don't like litigating strategy.
Well,
yeah.
There's plenty of open field. Now, it would force hitters to change their approaches, and they've decided to try to hit the ball over the shift instead of the other way against the shift. But there is plenty of open field where you can find
but
hits.
But you litigate strategy in all sports. For example, illegal defense in the NBA, offside in hockey, the trapezoid behind the net. How much did that curtail goalies' offense? So it's been done.
And I hate the trapezoid.
Yeah.
Offside is so you don't have a cherry picker down at the other end of the ice just hanging out.
But it's a variation of litigation, isn't it? I mean, I don't see a problem with it. If we want more offense in the game, this is a quick fix. This is a quick fix. Or you move the fences back 10 feet. They're not going to do that because they'll lose people in the stands. They're not going to do that. So sticking with baseball, the stink of cheating still hangs above the Houston Astros. Now, they won the 2017 World Series, but it was a championship tainted by their sign-stealing scandal. Jeffrey Luhnow was Houston GM at the time of the cheating scandal, and he gave his first interview since being fired in the wake of that mess and the frat boy culture that was prevalent at the time. Luhnow continues to insist that despite building the team, he had no idea what was really going on.
You know, because I was GM during that time, I figured I was going to get some punishment. I figured I was looking at some suspension. I was not expecting a year-long suspension. Mm-hmm. I was certainly not expecting for the team that I had spent 8 years building to fire me, let me go. I didn't know we were cheating. I had no idea. I wasn't involved. Major League Baseball's report stated that I didn't know anything about the trash can banging mm-hmm. scheme. They stated I might have known something about the video decoding scheme mm-hmm. and not paid it much attention. But there was really no credible evidence of that claim. And it felt like on that day that I was getting punished for something that I didn't do.
I think somebody's pants are on fire. I'm just saying.
I don't even know if his pants are on fire. I just love it when leaders... Hey, dude, it was your team.
I had no idea what was going on.
You mean the people in your employ had no morals or scruples? Does that not reflect on you, Mr. Luhnow?
I didn't know we were cheating.
I didn't know.
Didn't know. Didn't
know. We were cheating. I'm sitting up in my luxury suite every night watching games. I don't talk to anybody who might have ever tipped me off that this might be happening.
Of course not. Football. You guys alluded to this at the start of this segment. All is not well in Jerryland. After Monday's embarrassing 38-10 loss to the Cardinals, there are reports of some Dallas Cowboy players turning on their coaching staff. Good. Jane Slater broke the news for the NFL Network.
You know, a lot of players with this new coaching staff have been reluctant to get back to reporters. We haven't been in the locker rooms. We haven't really gotten a sense, is this team buying into this new coaching staff? And there has sort of been these insinuations, even by the coaching staff, that perhaps these players are improvising a bit. Let me tell you what I'm now hearing from some of the players this morning. You know, now that, of course, it's 2-4, discontent starts to leak out, Andrew. I'm told this coaching staff is totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. Another saying, they just aren't good at their jobs.
But the good news is Mike McCarthy just got there. This is a mess in Dallas, and it has more to it. It's so much more than they don't have Dak Prescott. This isn't a very good football team. They can't stop the run, but at least they can't stop the pass.
It's amazing how all this stuff comes out now when all of a sudden things aren't going that well. Where was this at the start? Where was this in week two? That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Why now? Oh, now that you're losing and things aren't going well, all of a sudden, yeah, our coach is this, our systems are this. Come and speak out when in training camp. Come and speak out after week one. You don't think these guys had the same idea, had the same thoughts on this team coaching staff?
But if you're 4-2, things aren't going well. You're not going to yip at your coach.
And I think part of the report was that they had agreed to keep it in-house for a while. They've been feeling this for a while. They only went public this week. Yeah. So,
And why are they going? Why are they going public with this? That's another thing. Why? Why go public?
Well, unnamed, right? They
and unnamed. Let's put their names to it. Like I don't like any of it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't like any of it. Yeah.
Well, the Cowboys.
If you want to go public, use your name. Don't go to reporters saying this is what's going on.
But behind
the scenes.
It would have to be a name player. It would have to be like Zeke Elliott. It can't be your backup long snapper ripping in on the coaches. It has to be someone of, you know, someone of merit, like Zeke Elliott or Dak Prescott.
Are you guys, you're okay with players coming out, going anonymous and just saying, okay, yeah, this is what's going on here?
Well, they're 2-4 and they look terrible. So obviously something is happening there that's not good. And it's not just the absence of Dak Prescott. It's not.
Yeah. Well, they can't. Offensively, they continually turn the ball over.
Yep.
And defensively, they can't get a stop.
Can't stop anything.
So on offense, when they don't turn the ball over, they tend to score. Now, that was in the Dak part of the season, not so much the Andy Dalton game against Arizona the other night. But they just are not able to outscore their mistakes. Mike Nolan is the defensive coordinator now.
Whom Jerry Jones says he's okay with.
Yeah. So it's... Yeah. And I always felt about Mike McCarthy that Green Bay did not maximize Aaron Rodgers' potential. I always felt that they left Aaron Rodgers short. And McCarthy was the coach there for the decade. But it's an ugly scene in Dallas. There's nothing better, though, than when the Cowboys are a circus.
Yeah.
Nothing better than when the Cowboys are a circus. It's America's great. Team.
Yeah.
America.
Despite that, though, they're still tops in the NFC East. It's unbelievable.
That division. Somebody, I was talking to Silk Gentile last night, and he said somebody did the math.
Yeah.
It's not going to be this way, but it is possible that the NFC East winner could be 4-12. Could you imagine?
Oh, welcome
to 2020. Hosting a playoff game at 4-12. Facing a wild card team that's probably in the NFC because it's a good conference, 10-6. How about them Cowboys?
That's it. That's all I got.
By the way, Larry and Barry, which is just a great moniker.
Barry, Larry.
Larry from Barry. Hey, Hugh and Scotty, don't get caught on the road after drinking that sheep kefir. Just a heads up, it may not agree with you after the first time you drink it.
Mm. I don't think there's any may involved here. It will not agree with me. I'm dreading this. I really am.
See, you got a longer drive than I do. I don't have that far to go when I leave for home.
There's some gas stations along the way, though. Yeah. Let's hope it doesn't come to
just poor Hugh. Well, we should send the Sportsnet Digital team for a ride along with Hugh Burrow after the show today. Now we'll do yay or nay at the top of the hour. Kevin Barker at 7:30 on World Series Game One. The coach. That helped Mike Zigomanis hit a 101-mile-an-hour fastball last week. Coming up next, all or nothing, 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We've got $100 in Nantucket gift cards to give away. We want to give them to you to be our contestant. Call now. We play next. All right, after an $800 winner yesterday, we reset the clock to $100 in Nantucket gift cards. Our contestant this morning for All or Nothing is Robin in Oshawa. Three true or false questions, Robin. You got to get them all right or all wrong. So if you get the first one wrong, don't hang up. You just got to get the next two intentionally incorrect. Good luck to you.
Thanks.
First question, Ilya Mikheyev signed with the Leafs for $3.29 million over 2 years. He was asking for $2.7 for one. True or false?
True.
That is correct. The original offer was $1 million by the Leafs per year. And, yeah, that $2.7 per year by Ilya.
So they kind of met in the middle. All right, Robin, you're in good shape. You got to get the next two correct.
All right, Robin, here's your second question. The Fitzmagic has disappeared in Miami. The Dolphins have named Tua Tagovailoa as their new starting quarterback. Is that true or is that false?
That's true.
Yeah, it is. Number 5 overall pick takes over. Heading into a bye week this week, but November 1st at home to the Rams will be Tua's first NFL start.
All right, Robin, for $100 in Nantucket gift cards, Brian Burke will join us at 8 o'clock this morning, and one of the things we'll discuss is his new book. Brian Burke was obviously the general manager of the Leafs, at one time the GM of the Canucks and the GM of the Anaheim Ducks. The Alberta-based team for which Brian Burke worked was the Edmonton Oilers. True or false?
False.
Good man. There we go.
Nice.
We're on a heater now. Two in a row. Robin takes home $100 in Nantucket gift cards. How long do you think it'll take for us to get to 800 again? I don't think we're ever going to go on another 7-day losing streak.
No, that was, we caught lightning in a bottle in a bad way there. We just kept losing and losing. It's like we were going for the number one overall pick. We were just tanking every single day.
So how you feeling? Because Ziggy is going to put us through our paces in about an hour and 45 minutes. The Sheep Kiefer. Adnan Virk will be a part of it.
Oof. How do I feel?
Are you nervous? You're not. You're like, I don't care. I think I'm going to be fine. You're nervous. I can tell.
I am a little bit nervous, only because I've never had this kind of stuff before. I mean, my morning drink is usually, you know, vodka out of the bottle.
Sure.
But now that we're drinking sheep kefir, I mean, I don't know what to expect.
I still don't know how to say the word.
I think it's
kefir.
Kefir.
We'll do it at 8:45, and hopefully none of us will get sick. Yay or nay? Coming up, and then Kevin Barker at 7:30. One of Hugh or I will barf the sheep kefir at 8:45.
Nay.
Okay.
You guys will be fine. Don't worry about it.
I'm not worried about me. Famous last words. Although I am worried about Hugh making sickly sounds. And yeah, Hugh's worried about Hugh, too, as Hugh walks out of the studio. All right, yay or nay, we throw a bunch of hypothetical scenarios out, and then we debate in a yay or nay fashion as to whether they will come true. Right out of the gate, Ziggy, yay or nay? The Maple Leafs player who will sell the most jerseys next season will be Jumbo Joe Thornton. Yay or nay?
Got to go nay as well, Scotty. Matthews,
Marner, Nylander.
Who does sell the most jerseys? I'd actually love to know that number.
Well, it's got
to
be one of those three.
Well, I'm curious because NHL.com keeps track of who has the most popular jersey sales, right? Curious to know in Toronto with our Leafs, which from like our local sales, I bet you it's Nylander. If I had to guess, I bet you Nylander's
well,
number
you,
one.
You, I remember you were talking about this when he changed his number from 29 to 88. I mean, just the significance of that, right? And Nylander at the time also offered to cover the charge for getting the number changed on his jersey, right, for fans who had bought Nylander 29 and all that, because it's a hugely popular jersey. Here's the thing with Joe Thornton. It depends on what... I'm a nay on this, but it depends on what type of jersey guy you are. Like, if you have to have the jersey of every Leaf with a name that rolled through here, you're going to get a Joe Thornton jersey. I mean, let's put it like this is a bigger name than Callie Johansson. Remember when they went and got Callie Johansson? No, you don't? Okay, well, they did. Take my word for it. Like 17 years ago. This is kind of like a Brian Leetch acquisition, except you got him for a full year, right? It's an epic name, a legendary name in his generation coming here, but it's not a long-term play. Buying a Jumbo Joe Thornton jersey and having it be current is not a long-term play. You're probably only getting the 1 year out of it, wearing it to the rink, wearing it around town while he's actually playing for the team. So only diehard jersey people will get the Jumbo Joe jersey. Because you can have the long-term play with Austin, Mitch, Willie,
yeah,
Morgan Riley, whatever, right?
So this isn't going to be an Olli Jokinen. So the people that have the Olli Jokinen jerseys aren't going to get a Joe Thornton?
I forgot Olli Jokinen played here. When you said Olli Jokinen just now, the first thing I thought of was the Panthers jersey, right? I mean, Olli Jokinen.
I played with him in Phoenix.
For the longest. Did you play with Olli Jokinen?
Oh. Yeah, I played with him.
Good guy?
Yeah, great. Like,
they always
awesome.
Say the Finns have a great sense of humor and all that. Like, Timo Solani was
awesome.
He's
like first guy at the rink, last one there, in the gym all the time, super prepared, his meals, his supple. Like, this guy's ultimate pro. He only lasted not even the whole year.
Well, they took him Phoenix. On, right? They took the Leafs took Olli Jokinen on as it wasn't for a playoff push or anything, right? It was right toward the end. But you know where
it was his last season. He went Nashville, Toronto, St. Louis in his last season.
You know where Olli Jokinen was the longtime captain?
Yeah.
Yay or nay? It is mathematically possible for the winner of the NFC East to have a record of 5-11 or even 4-11-1. This isn't going to happen, but it's still possible as we sit here today heading into week 7. If this happens, the NFL will make immediate changes to the playoff format. Yay or nay?
Nay. I like the format the way it is. I know they're tweaking it this year already, right?
They're adding an extra wildcard team in each conference.
Yeah, so I like more playoff teams in every sport. I think it's great. But what's going to happen in the NFC East this year? Yeah, it doesn't look good. Somebody's 4-5-11. Like, yeah,
it's not going to be that bad, but it is possible it could be. It's a stretch. You've heard my rant about the weather, right? The months and the weather. How we talk about in January, well, you know, it's so cold. At least the days are getting longer. And then in February, it's the shortest month of the year. Next month is spring. And for 12 months, we have some discussion about the weather, and it goes in a full cycle. Every year in sports, we have this discussion that there's always a crappy division in the NFL, and how is a 9-7 or an 8-8 or a 7-9 division winner going to end up with a home playoff game against a wild card team with a better record? That's the breaks. Beast mode was born. Marshawn Lynch's aura was born in a home playoff game for the Seattle Seahawks, Skittles and everything, when the 7-9 NFC West winning Seattle Seahawks hosted the New Orleans Saints approximately 10, maybe 11 years ago now. The NFC West is the best division in football today. It was the worst division in football 10 or 11 years ago. It cycles, man. The NFC East is crappy this year. 3-4 years from now, the NFC East could be just fine. There are too many teams and too many divisions, and the divisions have too few teams that ultimately you're going to run into seasons where one of those 8 divisions with 4 teams, the 4 teams aren't going to be very good. This year, it's the NFC East's turn. I don't think the NFL concerns itself at all with trying to denigrate the winning of one's division. They will add playoff teams. We're seeing that. They will expand the playoffs. I don't think they're concerned with taking away a home game for a division winner. So I, too, am a nay. Sticking with the NFL, yay or nay, the Dolphins are 3-3. They are heading into their bye week. Their next game is Sunday, November 1st at home against the LA Rams. As they sit here right now at 3-3, they're a game behind the 4-2 Bills in the AFC East, and they are effectively right there with the New England Patriots, who are 2-3. Tua Tagovailoa, their top draft pick, the former University of Alabama quarterback, is taking over for Ryan Fitzpatrick in time for that November 1st game. The Dolphins could make the playoffs this year and have chosen to go with Tua now instead of the veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick. Is it a good move, yay or nay?
I'm going nay. You're 3-3. You're one game out. Why would you make this move right now? Why now?
Oh, Ziggy, I'm going yay.
Oh.
And let me tell you why. The Miami Dolphins aren't there yet. They may be there enough to make the playoffs, but they're not going to divert from their plan, which is to get Tagovailoa into game action this season, because they're projecting bigger picture here. They're not going to divert from their plan, even if it costs them a couple of wins because a young rookie quarterback struggles. Think about it. Miami's got their own first rounder this year in next season's draft or next April's draft. They've got Houston's first and second rounders for the Laremy Tunsil trade. The Miami Dolphins could be a very good team as early as next year, probably 2 years from now. And they're looking at this saying, we could stifle Tua's development by keeping him on the bench for the rest of this year. For what? So that a 37-year-old Ryan Fitzpatrick can maybe lead us into a wild card playoff spot? I think that I like this because they are not diverting from their plan, even though their record is better than they thought it might be at this point.
You know who should make a trade for Fitzpatrick? The Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
No? You don't like that move?
I don't know.
Or your team should make a move
No. No.
The 49ers.
Little Fitz magic. Little Fitz.
Yeah,
well, Fitz,
you could use a little Fitz magic in your life.
You know what? I would say to myself that I feel badly for Ryan Fitzpatrick because he so often ends up getting the short end of the stick. Jameis Winston took over for him in Tampa Bay. Tua now in Miami. He's played almost everywhere, except that he's signed for so much guaranteed money on that one contract he did with the Buffalo Bills. He's a Harvard graduate who's going to have $100 million in the bank by the time he retires. I think dude's enjoying life just fine. I do like this move for Miami because it means that they're sticking to their plan regardless of how this season plays out. Silent Vic, be the tie break for us.
Shocking.
Silent Vic got in my ear because he can speak. And he said, I changed his mind.
Yeah, right. He had it. So he already knew that he was going. He's pro Tua. Trust me.
He had the horsey sound ready to go. And then I stepped in with a take. And that take took him. Yay or nay, if it means going to a World Series, Blue Jays fans would accept the team being run like the Tampa Bay Rays. Go cheap with no big spending. Yay or nay? I'm yaying this one.
Oh, yeah. I'm yaying it too.
I think the World Series is a tonic. It's a distraction. People will be pissed off if they don't step up and pay Bo when the time is right. I'm assuming Bo's going to work out, be a pretty good ball player. He already is. Or whether it's Vladdy or Cavan or any of the other kids to come, the Nate Pearsons of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people will be mad about that. And if you work off of the assumption that it's your young core that is going to grow together and then get more expensive, and that will lead to a World Series, it'll be problematic if they don't get there. But Tampa Bay does it just by being shrewd and making good trades. People only care about winning. People only care about winning. I don't think people get married in their minds to players anymore, Ziggy. With so much free agency, so many trades, so much movement, if he's on your team, you cheer for him. If he's not, he's somewhere else. He's gone.
Yeah. Guys, you know where I sit with the young players, and if you got a superstar, I don't understand, Scotty, why you just don't lock guys up sooner. Why not pay guys now?
What's in it for Bo to do a deal now? Other than I could tear my knee up and never be the same.
Yeah. Throw money at the guys. I think that's what's going to have to happen.
Right.
You want to keep players here?
But Bo Bichette's going to look at you and say, I'm going to project myself to be worth this, this, and this in my 3 years of arbitration eligibility. And if I'm as good as I think I am, and I'm as good as you think I am, I'm going to be worth $25 to $30 million in my first year or two of free agency eligibility. Do the Blue Jays want to lock in on a massive eight-figure number for 5 or 6 years down the road when Bo Bichette's only played a season and a half of Major League Baseball? That's the counterpoint.
So you think there's going to be some question marks from the Jays side saying, well, show us first and then we'll pay
you. Because
you
still control him, right? He can't leave.
Yeah.
He can't leave.
Yeah.
He can't leave as a free agent until his 6 years of Major League service time are accrued. So for as long as you can control him, you do that, and maybe you sit him down with 3 years left of control if he's had another nice season and a half or so, and you say, you want to do this for 6 or 7 years? It would be an entertaining conversation. Ross Atkins and Bo Bichette.
Ross thinks that's entertaining for sure.
Talking dough. That's a take. Jim Mora. Do you remember Jim Mora? Not Jim Mora Jr., Jim Mora Sr.
Yes.
Jim Mora
Sr. I know the one.
You know the playoffs.
Classic. Well, that's just gold.
So Jim Mora Sr. was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts right around the time that Peyton Manning was breaking into the league. So he had him in his very early days, and the Colts played poorly and got trounced in a crucial game, and he got asked about the effect that that would have on their playoff positioning, and this was his response.
I just want to win a game.
If you rewind 2 or 3 years further back, yesterday was the 24th anniversary of this epic rant when Jim Mora was the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and they had lost a divisional game to the Carolina Panthers, who were in their second year of existence.
Well, what happened was that second game, we got our ass kicked, or the second half, we just got our ass totally kicked. We couldn't do diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball and went down and got points, we got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to. It was a horse performance in the second half. Horse. I'm totally embarrassed and totally ashamed.
So he caught himself enough to say diddly poo instead of...
We couldn't do diddly poo.
He caught himself enough to say diddly poo, but then he came with the horse bleep later twice.
I think he knew that was just, it sounded bad. And he's like, you know what? I might as well just go with the full thing and just say it a couple times and just, diddly poo's not going to work for anyone.
Diddly poo. you must have an epic coach meltdown story or two from your days in the NHL, either publicly or preferably privately.
Yeah. NHL, the guys are pretty good. The coaches I had, Laviolette, Maurice, Gretzky, Therrien. I had Therrien melt down on me in a one-on-one.
We see for next game?
I liked him, though. Oh, yeah. No, he wouldn't do anything in the room. Like, every guy was... you know, level-headed, no matter how bad it got. I mean, I saw Paul Maurice once snapped because guys were playing two-touch, which is like a soccer game we play before. I'm sure you've seen it on TV. They show the guys, you're in a circle and you can touch the ball twice before it's got to go to someone else.
Did somebody get hurt doing that recently?
Oh, yeah. Guys have like tweaked their knees, rolled their ankles. Yeah, it happens. So he kind of said something one year. I would have said something too. When you're losing and you're sitting there playing this two-touch ball, like if my team's not playing well and they're not, and we're not ready to start games, like if you're going to play two-touch before the game, you better be ready to start. So he said something to a guy in the, I had a coach in the minors who pushed over a Gatorade bucket, the water bucket, like all over the room. Like, so I'm talking about, it was like a pool in the room.
Was it water or was it Gatorade? Sticky,
it
gross.
It was Gatorade, but like all over everything. That's about the craziest thing I've seen. yeah. And it was wet everywhere. And it was like intermission. Like we still had to go out and play, and everybody, it was on the road, and everybody's gear that sits on the ground was like all wet. So now not only are we playing bad, all of our stuff is soaked with Gatorade. So I've had that. I think one of the best stories I've heard is in Toronto, and I wasn't there for it, but, Ron Wilson, to start practice, he like starts and stops on the whistle, very old school. So usually you go for 10, 15 seconds, coach blows the whistle and guys go around the ice, right? And you do it for a couple minutes, but you take breaks, right? Every 10 seconds. So apparently one day in practice, they start going around the ice. Instead of 10, 15 seconds, he makes the guys go for over 2.5 minutes. And guys are starting to swear. Apparently guys are banging their sticks. They're not happy. And then he calls everybody to go by the board for their first drill, right? And guys are losing it. He came and he said, "All right, guys, just wanted to make sure everyone could take a Phil Kessel shift." And that was it. Because Phil would take long shifts. Even when I was there, Phil did not care about taking 2-minute shifts at all. But he could actually play for two. Like, there's some guys after 30 seconds, they can't play hockey. I've seen Phil go out for like a 2 or 3 minute shift and then pick a pass off and beat both defensemen on a breakaway because they were too tired, because they're just he was in his own end for so long that guys were tired on the ice and he would beat players up the ice. And I've never seen anything like that before. A guy that could be out there for 2 minutes and then beat a guy in a race up the ice.
So you're saying it was really, really good cardio, or there was not a lot going on for most of those 2 minutes, so he'd stored up energy?
Honestly, I think he's just, I know he gets the bad rap for the hot dog eating and the not working, and, you know, is he always the best guy? We've heard other players come out publicly, but I mean, he's an athlete. He can play the game. Like, he's a guy where he could not put his equipment on for 2 weeks and go in and light it up in a game. Like, it's impressive. Like, one of the best talents I've ever seen play.
As you were talking, Ziggy, I was thinking about diddly poo or playoffs. And I think at some point we might have a bit of a segment with diddly poo or playoffs. And that it's effectively the game of tank. If a team gets out of the gate badly, say like the Habs, we pick on the Habs, lose 10 of their first 15 games. Do they go diddly poo for the rest of the year? Do they tank it?
Diddly poo.
Or do they push for the playoffs?
The Habs?
No. That's a hypothetical. So down the road, we'll, you know, whether it's the NHL.
I thought we were
going
to do that right now.
No.
I was like, all right.
No. We're not diddly pooing the Habs in the middle of the offseason. Wait, we could do it with the Cowboys right now. 2-4, leading their crappy NFC East division. Diddly poo or playoffs for the Dallas Cowboys?
Diddly poo.
Diddly poo.
But somebody's got to win that division. I'm going playoffs. Silent Vic, break the tie. Diddly poo or playoffs for the 2-4 Dallas Cowboys?
Silent
Vic's on my side. I think it's because he feels bad for me that I have to drink this stuff that came out of a sheep's teat. I'm surprised we're not marching a sheep into this studio.
Apparently there's like grains involved. Like, I think they milk the sheep and then it like it ferments and then you get like these kefir grains. I don't know. I honestly, there's 20 million probiotics. That's all you have to. You're going to be healthier the rest of the day. You're like, you're going to show up tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're going to be a new person.
I'm going to be wearing a diaper to work tomorrow. That's my guess. Just to get through the three hours. We could also do another segment based off of everything you just said in the last minute. How does Ziggy know this stuff? I'll tell you what he does know. He knows how to hit a 100 mile an hour fastball. Kevin Barker, coach Kevin Barker, 101. Yes, 101. I stand corrected. Kevin Barker, coach Kevin Barker on game one of the World Series and where this is all headed on some of the ways the game is played in this day and age and whether baseball's got legitimate concerns on that front and whether or not he was truly surprised that Mike Zigomanis hit a 101 mile an hour pitch off a pitching machine. Kevin Barker next. Looks like the third of five videos is out on social media, on Twitter, at Fan590. Ziggy at the bat. The pursuit of the 90-mile-an-hour fastball.
Is it me in this one yet, or is it just you and Hugh in this one?
Oh, I saw a little bit of you.
Am I in this one?
You're the end. Yeah, the main event was saved for the end. It was a big day 6 days ago at the dugout up in, don't call it Vaughn, call it Concord. And Coach Kevin Barker. This is your new nickname, by the way, Kev, on this show. Your coach. Ziggy thinks, you know, Ziggy calls coach. You coach now. You
coach from
that?
Now on.
Yeah, I'll take it. If I can get Ziggy to where we got Ziggy, I'll take that. I think I earned that for the 25 minutes that I was in that batting cage with Zigomanis. I earned the name coach.
Okay, so we got to know what you truly believed. Because I got to say, Kev, you laughed at us when you needed to laugh at us, but you also patted us on the back. Like, you were playing the psychological game. I don't think I hit 92 like I did if you didn't say you're on to this. Like, you made me believe. Did you actually believe, or were you BSing?
No, when I saw you guys take a dry swing, I said, yeah, you got a little bit of something in your swing. You know, you can go direct to the baseball. You're not out and around as much. You know, you have a little bit of bat speed. You know where the barrel's at. You know how to drive the knob of the bat towards the baseball. You knew all those kind of things. I just loosened you up a little bit, you know, refined what you already had and gave you some confidence. But hitting is all about confidence. Isn't sports about confidence? You know, when Shaquille O'Neal walked to the free throw line and started popping free throws, it's confidence. I made one. I can make the next one. It's those kind of things. I just remember when I was a hitter and I was in the batting cage and I was struggling, you know, and I didn't feel where I was at. It took a little somebody just saying, hey, I got you. It's no problem. You take one good swing, you build off of that. You take another good swing, and all of a sudden, you got a great swing. You have a great swing. You start putting balls in play. You get more confidence. Zigomanis, what he do when he hit the first ball to right field, he got more confidence. You know, the swing got a little bit better. He was like, crank that thing up, let's get a little bit harder, now I know what I'm doing. You know, it's those kind of things. So it's all about confidence. And again, you know you guys know what you're doing. You've watched enough baseball, you've watched enough guys try and hit that. See ball, hit ball is not as hard as everybody makes it sound like it is.
Imagine if I would have got the full Coach Barker lesson. That was like an abbreviated 20, I don't think I was even, that wasn't even a 25-minute lesson. But imagine we went through the full thing. I'd be hitting, I mean, what can you get that machine up to? 110, 120? Like,
oh,
where do we stop?
Yeah, I don't want to throw you under the bus, but if you'd have showed up a little bit earlier, you might have got the 45-minute deal. Okay? Right? I mean, when you get a standing ovation for actually showing up, that's... So, now, don't get ahead of yourself. You know, you hit 101. You know, I don't know how many swings you took at 101, but you did hit one hard. You know, you take that, you run away with it, you don't go back. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, you brag about it. If I were you guys, I'd stop taking bets that you don't know for 100% that you can win. Because now I'm hearing, I'm listening to you guys talking, and I hear somebody has to drink something that's green.
No,
what's going on in this show?
It's not even green.
It can turn green after a couple of days.
I don't know.
Do you know that sheep produce something called kefir?
Oh man.
We got to drink. Hugh Burl and I have to drink that in about an hour because Ziggy and Silent Vic won a bet on the Kansas City Buffalo game on Monday night. So
seriously, you bet against the Chiefs and that quarterback.
Well, yeah, but you see Hazel's within earshot. I know why you're pumping up Kansas City right now, because your wife's within earshot and she's a diehard Chiefs fan.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get in trouble at home. That's why.
Look, if you would have watched the Bills defense the first 3 weeks of the season, you know, again, think about the bets before you actually make them. You know, one of your hosts there is on a little bit of a hot streak. You got to know that too. You know, you don't want to bet against that. And betting, I guess you're betting for the Bills to hold down the best offense in football.
Well,
I don't know about that. And coming off a loss, the Chiefs just lost. So, you know, what are they going to do? They might run. Now all of a sudden, they're one of the best running teams in football, and you add the best quarter. Oh, man. Like, again, you know, sometimes I guess you earn what you have to drink. That may not be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, and I'm not allowed to spike it with anything either, which is problematic. Kevin Barker is with us, and get him on Instagram for all of his hitting tutorials off that beautiful balcony in West End, Toronto, at Kevin Barker Baseball. And you should be committed to this cause. You should continue to do these hitting tutorials in the middle of December, January, and February out there on that balcony, Kev. What do you make? That's funny. Yeah.
It's windy and cold in Toronto, if you hadn't noticed.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got heaters on that balcony for sure.
Oh,
he's got the heaters going.
Oh, yeah. There's a fire pit. There's a fire pit out there.
Yeah, you can see me. You can see me digging out holes enough in the snow so I can give you guys how to hit a fastball down and away.
What do you make of game one? I mean, Kershaw looked good generally through six innings, and it seems that Mookie Betts has reignited the who's the best player in baseball debate. And I won't come off the Mike Trout answer to that question. The problem is that, as I've said about Trout, this would be the equivalent of LeBron James never making the playoffs in the NBA. We just don't get to see Mike Trout play at the most important time of the year because his team sucks. Yeah. Mookie Betts, he's on the Dodgers. He's going to do some things in October.
Yeah, I think Corey Seager starting to rake has helped Mookie Betts, right? You know, you don't want to walk Mookie Betts. He gets better pitches to hit. He's getting fastballs and fastball counts. You know, he's getting strikes. That's the big thing. And yet last night he didn't miss those. And when he gets on base, you know, he's not the fastest of guys, but he gets great jumps. He cuts angles when he runs the bases. You know, listen, the thing that keeps popping out to you is the Rays can't hit. I've been saying this all year to Jeff Blair, and Jeff Blair's been throwing things at me on Baseball Central because I'm saying that. The Rays are very one-dimensional. You know, well, I guess if you add defense, but analytics will tell them defensive-wise where to go stand. And, you know, that normally gets a ball hit right at you. And most big league position players can catch balls right at you. I'm not trying to take anything away from the Rays, but, you know, they are one-dimensional when it comes to – it's all around pitching and defense and analytics when it comes to where you stand. Offensively, 1-4, that includes Austin Meadows, who was the pinch hitter, was 0-15 with 4 strikeouts. That's – when you're in a World Series and you're facing the best team, at least in the National League, you're going to have to hit something. And Brandon Lau, let's go. What is he, 6-56 in the playoffs? Enough. Like, I get – little bit of the he got us here kind of thing, but he's 6 for 56. Like, you can't continue to hit him second or third in your order. Move him down. Like, do him a favor. This is what it is, because basically what you're doing when you run a guy out there that's 6 for 56, you're saying, help us go to win the World Series. Right now, he's not capable of doing that for whatever reason. Is he a good hitter? I don't know. Maybe good pitching's called up to a halfway decent hitter. Maybe that's what it is. He doesn't like the ball up. You know, Clayton Kershaw, maybe he doesn't really like left-handers now. A good lefty who can go middle away with a heater and expand with a secondary pitch. You know, he's not going to give you a competitive at bat. You see the fanny thing out. You see the weak swings. You see the non-competitive at bats. For me, G-Man Choi, where's he at? He seems to be their one of their better hitters behind Randy Superman. Put G-Man Choi in the game. Enough of the platoon thing. You know, the Dodgers tried this for the last 3 years in the World Series, the platoon thing. Now they have an everyday lineup. Well, you know, they're interchanging some bottom-of-the-order things, but nobody has 9 guys that play every single day. You know, you have 6 guys that you're going to ride in the lineup, and you're going to figure out the other 3. The Dodgers have figured that out. They know that they're going to ride it, and it's going to make it easier decisions for their manager to platoon and interchange at the end of a game, and it'll make him easier decisions when he goes to a bullpen. But until the Rays start hitting, it's just going to be very hard to take them serious in the playoffs because of who they're up against. The Dodgers are going to wear you out when it comes to that opposing pitcher, and sooner or later they're going to have a good inning. Can you match that? That's the thing, and right now you would say with the Rays lineup, they don't really have any chance of doing that.
Dodgers bats, you're right, coach, that their bats were great in game 1. How much carried over from the last series, though, into game 1? Does that mean anything?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's, you know, Tyler Glasnow's like nothing they faced in the series before that. You know, Blake Snell's not going to be that because of the slider-curveball combination. Charlie Morton's not going to be that because of experience and knowing big situations, how to get big-time hitters out. So, no, I don't think that's what it is. I just think it's I have an approach. I have a strength. You know, Cody Bellinger yesterday saw some fastballs in his first at-bat, goes up, hunts the first pitch heater because that's a fastball count from a fastball pitcher. And a first pitch, and I know that thing's on the black end, but he's hunting it. And when you're hunting it, you're looking for it, and you're as athletic as Cody is, and you have bat-to-ball skills and tremendous hand-eye coordination, you're going to get to that 98, and you're probably going to hit it in the air, and you're probably going to hit it out. It's that kind of thing. So, look, you also look at runners in scoring position. Don't look at the number. Like, the Dodgers were 5 for 14. Don't look at the 5. Look at the 14. They had 14 chances to change the game. The Rays had 5. They were 2 for 5. That's the thing, right? Don't look at the number in front of that before the 4. 2 for 5. They had 5 chances to drive in some runs and didn't get it done. The Dodgers had 14 chances. That's all you need to know is they smother the Rays' strength, which is pitching. It just seems to me like the Rays were always pitching out of the stretch. And when you do that, you get to see the ball a little bit better. They tend to hang balls a little bit more. And bad things happen to, you know, a team that's trying to get you out because you have great approaches at the plate.
With the coach, Kevin Barker, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So the commissioner, Rob Manfred, was talking yesterday, and he's neutered the lower minor league system. He has, you know, called the World Series trophy a piece of metal. But one of the innovations, or two of the innovations, as they're put, that he would like to keep going forward are the expanded playoffs, which I don't have a problem with. I think that more teams in contention mean more fan bases that are into it into September. I don't think that that's a bad thing. But he wants to keep the fact that you would start the top or bottom of an extra inning with a runner on second base. Is this, Kevin, an attempt to save pitching arms, because the assumption would be that games would end sooner? Because it's very clear that every other element he's tried to add, the automatic intentional walk, the 3-pitch minimum for relievers, these things have done nothing to curtail the length of these games.
3 hours and 24 minutes was the game time yesterday. That's because Clayton Kershaw was good, and the lineup for the Rays has not been good lately. That's, you know, they were easier to work through. Listen, all these rules are fine in the regular season. It's like the three-batter rule in the playoffs. I don't get that either. Playoff time's totally different. These teams work very hard. I don't care if it's a 60-game season. Don't tell the players that the Dodgers, because how many times they've been in the World Series and how many times they've tried to win it, that a 60-game season doesn't matter. It matters to these teams. And to have the same rules in the playoffs as you would in the regular season doesn't make any sense to me. I can understand over a 162-game season. If you want to start a guy on second base in the 10th inning, I don't got any problem with that, right? It's about exactly what you said is saving pitching. If you want to expand the rosters, I don't really like that because I think the 26th man in the organization probably is not a big leaguer. I think that is where you have a little bit of gray. When I was a player, it was the ultimate thing to be on the 25-man roster. I knew I was one of the best 25 guys in this organization. To be the best 27th guy, you don't want to water it down. You don't want to, take away dreams from players that are saying, how hard and tough it is to be a big leaguer. And that might be doing that a little bit. It's, you mentioned taking away some of the lower levels in the minor leagues. Listen, if you can't hit in high A ball, you probably don't need to be a professional athlete in baseball anyway. I understand it's about the fans and these towns that have these teams want to come and watch, and it's fun to do all these things. But if you're an actual baseball player, there is too many levels. There's too many levels to work through to try and be a big leaguer. You shorten those a little bit. You sort of wean out the people that are probably not a good hitter, probably not a good pitcher, can't defend, can't run the bases right. It's those kind of things. You simplify it a little bit more. You got four levels. I got A ball, I got high A, I got double A, I got triple A, and then you're a big leaguer. It's those kind of things. So I got no issues with that. I just think there should be two different ways of thinking. There's a playoff way and there's a regular season way.
At Kevin Barker Baseball on Instagram. He is the coach. Thank you for doing this morning, pal. We'll reach out again next week. And shout out to Hazel's Chiefs. I'm drinking cheap kefir because of it.
Oh, boy, just think before you speak.
When have I ever done that? And why would I start now?
All right, I'll see you, boys. Have a good day.
You bet. Kevin Barker. Coach. 2 to 3 o'clock with Jeff Blair on Baseball Central this afternoon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Adnan Virk will be a part of the Sheep Kiefer drink-off because he's been a part of the Sheep Kiefer conversations that we've had. So we'll keep him on at about 8:45. Adnan Virk will join us at 8:30. Brian Burke at the top of the hour. We'll get into the McKayev settlement with the Maple Leafs, Joe Thornton and all that. We'll also talk a lot to Berkey about Burke's Law, A Life in Hockey, his book. Just on the shelves, we'll make a nice holiday present. We'll get into some of the topics that he writes about as he discusses his life in hockey. Hugh jumps into studio. What you watching? What's on TV tonight? That's coming up.
RIP, Tony Lewis, lead singer of this band, The Outfield. He passed away suddenly yesterday at the age of 62. The song is called Your Love's off the album Play Deep. And an incredible album. And this was a big song for me growing up in my teens. So, Tony Lewis, RIP.
That's sad, 62.
62, yeah, suddenly.
Yeah,
awful.
Brian Burke at the top of the hour. What are we watching tonight, Hugh, and what you watching?
Well, I'm going to split my time tonight, gentlemen, between War of the Worlds, and of course, it's Game 2 of the World Series tonight. Dodgers going with Tony Gonsolin on the mound. Tampa Bay responding with Blake Snell, looking for something after that 8-3 drubbing the Dodgers gave him last night. Can they bounce back, you think, tonight?
Absolutely they can. I think that they're a good enough team. I think this is going to be a 6 or 7 game series. I am rooting for the Dodgers But I don't think that this will be a sweep. I think Tampa Bay can win at least a couple of games.
I mean, the Dodgers, it's strange. I don't know how you guys feel about this. Yeah, they have all of this money, and they're easily one of the richest teams in all baseball. But you want them to win. Like, they seem like nice guys. Like, they don't seem like, you know, spoiled brats.
Well, and they've also had a couple of World Series losses in 17 and 18, and they were, of course, played Houston, the cheating Astros. Mm-hmm. They've been in the playoffs every year since 2014. They're actually the big money version of the Rays. And people say, well, how do you afford Mookie Betts? They don't have any money committed to anybody. Doesn't mean that they don't control guys through arbitration eligibility and whatnot, but they don't actually have any real dollars as we sit here right now committed to anybody other than Betts in 2022. Like, the world is the Dodgers' oyster. Cody Bellinger's going to be there. Corey Seager's going to be there. All of that. They'll pay those guys. But they are set up to do whatever it is that they want.
Yeah.
It's a well-run organization. And Andrew Friedman runs the Dodgers. He was the one who made the Rays great in the late 2000s and early 2010s.
Hmm.
And there you have it.
Go Dodgers.
Brian Burke on the Mikheyev settlement. The Leafs have him for 2 years at a fixed salary. I think that's a good thing in a flat cap. On the acquisition of Joe Thornton via free agency. And we'll spend a lot of time on Burke's Law, A Life in Hockey. Burke's book is on shelves now. We'll discuss it with him next. Minus 40 minutes until Hugh and I drink this sheep kefir business that
we actually have quite a number of people inquiring about trying this out.
Well, here's what I want to know. I want to know if Berkey, when he was running the Leafs and you were playing, if he ever wandered on down to the locker room at any point and saw you drinking any of this crazy crap that you put into your body.
I wasn't there long enough for him to see me.
Well, you'd always talk it up in the locker room. I remember you. You were giving dissertations on the plant-based diet. Here he is from the NHL on Sportsnet Hockey Night in Canada, and the book is on shelves now. Burke's Law, A Life in Hockey. Brian Burke with Stephen Brunt. Good morning, Berkey. How are you?
Good guys, how are you?
We're doing well. Let's begin with your book, and it would make an excellent holiday gift with Christmas just a couple of months away now. Stephen Brunt was on yesterday and was telling us that you had actually started writing a manuscript long before Stephen himself ever got involved. When did you start putting pen to paper, Berkey, about your life's experiences?
Well, the deal I made in Calgary was that they could terminate the deal at the end of any season, and I could walk away at the end of any season. So in February of 2018, Ken King, the late, great Ken King, came into my office, good guy, and said, look, we're going to probably change things out at the end of the year. And I was like, okay, Brad Treliving's ready to fly solo. And okay, I said, fine. So, but between then and the end of the year, I was less involved than I had been before, so I started to do an outline. I said, okay, I'm going to write a book. Here are the chapters. Here are the high points, low points. And I did about a 100-page outline, single-spaced. And I gave that to Stephen Brunt when I hired him. And he looked at it. He said, this is garbage. He said, I can't. He said, you write like a lawyer. He said, it's really boring. And I think that's probably true. So he used it as an outline. He used it kind of as a skeleton, if you will, like a timeline or an outline for the book. But he wrote the book. He did a really nice job.
Can you tell of any parts of the book or give us a little outline of any of the stories that, you know, people can kind of find out about before they buy the book or are interested in the book and something that you want people to read about that could help them in their lives?
Well, the book's been out for several days, and if kind of radio hosts like you guys are supposed to have gotten it and read it by now or looked at it by now. But since you're too lazy or cheap, the two of you, the goal was what I wanted to do, and I think Stephen really put my words into action. I wanted you to feel like you're in the room with me. So I'm going through my whole life as far as being a GM. It's mostly about being working in pro hockey. So I work at the NHL or I work as a GM. I'm in Calgary. I'm making the Sedin deal in Vancouver. And I wanted you to feel like you're sitting in the chair next to me and wanted to convey how these things work. When you draft Chris Pronger in 1993, dealings with owners that are difficult, dealings with players that are difficult, dealing with coaches that are difficult. And I wanted people to feel like they're sitting in the room. And I really think Stephen Brunt captured that. A buddy of mine from Ontario that lives in California called me or texted me yesterday and said, I just finished the book. It's your voice. I felt like I was in the room. And that was my goal. That made my day that I got that text. So the story's about, okay, so the Sedin deal.
Yeah.
How did that come together? And people have heard bits and pieces of that story, but here it is from start to finish, how that deal happened, every single step of the way. Drafting Chris Pronger in 1993, every single step of the way. The Pronger trade to get him to Anaheim, the cup run, it's all there. I think people will find it interesting. The sales have been good. Response has been good. I'm excited about it.
Berkey, specific to the Sedin trade, was there any possible way that those two twins would have played for different teams? Or were they adamant, it's us and us together? Because if it's us and us together, there's got to be a team. It turned out to be your Vancouver Canucks. There's got to be a team that somehow makes it work that they both end up in the same city.
Yeah, they said adamantly, like, we are not coming unless we get drafted by the same team. And they actually, the agent told me afterwards, they had a plan worked out where one of them was going to go play at St. Mike's and kill his draft eligibility and become eligible again to be drafted. So I think they were serious about it. They told me, after they retired, they told me they were kind of resigned. They had a plan, but they were kind of resigned that they might have to play a part for a year or two until I solved everything for them. But what they told me, and I believed them, was we are not coming unless we come together. And they weren't coming the first year anyway. Like, they were very open about that. So we drafted two kids we knew weren't coming the first year anyway, and then wouldn't come unless they were drafted together.
How did you decide where to start the book? I was kind of digging into this with Stephen yesterday, but I feel like that would be one of the toughest parts of writing a book is, you know, how do I, you know, come out of the gates with my book?
I start with being on the bench right before, as watching the clock tick down till we won the Stanley Cup in 07. I was on the bench. We went down with about 2 minutes to go, took the elevator down, and we wanted to be with the players on the bench when we won the cup. And so we were down there with watching the clock tick down, 20 seconds, 19 seconds. Our owners were down there. So that's where I started. Okay, so here's the pinnacle. Here's climbing Mount Everest and then go back. How did it start? So I did not spend a lot of time on my childhood. I hate biographies. The one I remember is Alec Baldwin. I bought his biography. I like him as an actor. I'm not sure he's a good person. I don't think so. But there's, I don't know, three chapters about him growing up, fourth grade, fifth grade. I'm like, I don't care about any of this until you start acting. I don't really care. So my childhood, there's very little about that because I just don't think people are really interested in that. The only part I put in is that I am one of 10 children. We did move a lot. When I was a kid, my dad was kept getting promoted, and we moved, and it helped me. I was a shy kid, which I'm sure you'll believe that. And then when we moved to Minnesota when I was 12, and that's where I watched the high school hockey tournament on TV and fell in love with the game. I started playing hockey when I was 13, and that's important because obviously nobody starts that late and gets anywhere, and I managed to play college hockey and a little bit of pro. So it starts really just my childhood and high school, there's one lengthy lesson in there. I try and put lessons in there where you learn something as a player, how not to do something. So I was playing high school football, and we play on Friday nights in Minnesota, right? So Minnesota high school football is Friday nights under the lights. And we played Bloomington Lincoln, and they had a star running back, and we weren't supposed to beat them. And our coach said, if you beat them, we get tomorrow off, Saturday morning off. And usually we had films, light workout, and then films again. So we watch our film from the night before, go out, work out, then watch our opponent for the next week, and then go home, about 2 hours, 3 hours. And our coach told us if we won this game that we weren't supposed to win, that we'd have Saturday off. Well, we won. We bus back to the high school. We're changing. We're all going home. And he said, I'll see you guys tomorrow at 8. And I went right to the
office. Okay, we'll try to reconnect with Berkey there, because I think, first of all, it became garbled, and then it totally cut out. So
yeah, I wanted to hear what he had to say there.
Well, we'll get him to pick up the story. Yeah.
Yeah. Remind him to start.
Yeah. Effectively, we won the game on Friday night, and we were back at the school, and... are we about to find out that all of a sudden Saturday is not a day off? that the coach didn't like the way that they did something in the game, even though that they won, or
my favorite Berkey story from is he? Let me know when he's back, because I want to.
The guys will let it, just go ahead now.
Okay.
The guys will
It was training camp, and Clark MacArthur. We were all coming in for a game. And no one really knows where to park. It's underneath the room, and there's no real assigned spots. Like certain teams, the names are on the spots. With the Leafs, you park underneath the room. Underneath it was the ACC then, and they're just numbered spots. You just pull into a spot, and apparently Clark MacArthur parked in Berkey's spot. And it's like the first week you're there, he's new to the team, and then Berkey walks in. You don't see management too often in the room. And he comes in like looking, everyone going, you got to go quiet, right? The room's kind of loud and before a game. And then it goes quiet as he's walking through. He goes up to Clarkey getting changed. And he's like, did you park in my spot? But mad. And Clark stopped dead, like deer in headlights. The whole room goes quiet. Berkey loses it on him. And then apparently he didn't say I was joking, but Clark, he left it as it is. And all the guys are going up, what happened? He's like, he just chewed me out from parking his park. And Clarkey was literally one step away for wanting to move teams. He wanted a trade. I'm not kidding.
All right. Well, Berkey's back. Let's see if he remembers this story. Did Clark MacArthur park in your spot?
Yeah, but they weren't, there was no sign. He just had a number. I think it was 16.
Okay.
I think my spot was 16. and so I gave it to him, but it wasn't like there was a sign there. In Vancouver, there was a sign. When I was the GM there, there was a sign. And one of the Grizzlies, we own the NBA team that when I worked there, one of the Grizzlies parked in my spot. It says 24 hours, Brian Burke, general manager, Vancouver Canucks. So I parked, and they had a game that night. They had a shoot around. And so I parked on his bumper. I pulled up I drove an Escalade then, and I put my bumper against his bumper and went back to my office. So a kid from the Grizzlies comes up and says, Mr. Burke, you have to move your car. I said, I'm not moving the car. And he said, well, give me the keys, I'll move it. I said, you're not driving my car. I said, you tell that player, whoever it is, if he comes up and apologizes, then I'll move my car. And the guy refused. He's like, no, I'm not going to apologize. And so I said, okay, I'm not moving the car. So I stayed there all day. He took a cab home after the shoot-around, or got a ride, came back to the game, and then I went home. And then he moved his car, and no one ever parked there again. Clark MacArthur, who's a great kid, he parked at my spot. It wasn't numbered, but I asked one of the traders, whose car is that? He said, Clark MacArthur says, watch this. I'm going to give it to him. I didn't really care.
No.
But I gave it to him, and he was white as a sheet.
No, I was telling Scotty, he literally was one step away from going in and wanting to get a trade. He was so rattled.
He was thinking he was going to get run out of town. Berkey, before you cut out there, you were talking about how you guys had won a game on Friday. You had been told that you were going to have Saturday off. This is a high school game, and then we lost you. So you're back.
Okay, sorry.
You're back in the change room after the game. Pick up the story.
So coach comes in and says, we'll see you tomorrow at 8 o'clock. And I said to the offensive line coach, that's garbage. You promised us a day off. And then he kicked the four guys off the team. And it ruined our season. It split our team right down the middle. So that's the first story in the book that's, you know, pre-pro hockey or pre-college hockey, because I thought it was instructive. Like, you can't lie to your players.
A question I hear a lot, Berkey, with former players is, would you do it again? And, you know, you've been a player, you've been an agent, worked with the league, been a GM, won a cup. Would you do it all again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's the one week I would change in my life, and until I die, is the week my son died. Obviously, I'd like to have that back. But job-wise, the only regret I have is I worked too hard at parenting and put that ahead of my marriages, and both my wives deserve better than that. So if you're going to try and be the best you can at work and try and be a good dad and ignore the husband side of it. So I'm 0-for-2 at weddings. But other than that, no, I loved everywhere I went. I kept getting fired or moving on to a new job. Every move I made was a good move. Like, I made it into a good move. It turned it into something better. So I loved all. I worked in 5 markets plus New York City when I worked for the league. Loved them all except New York City. I liked working for Gary Bettman, but I did not like living in New York City. But the other places I lived, I loved it. I loved moving, and I loved packing up my stuff and moving. It was great.
Berkey, the Phil Kessel trade is something that you touch on in the book. Would you go back and change anything about that?
Yeah, I'd lottery protect it. See, teams didn't lottery protect deals then. That wasn't done in our league. At least I don't think it had ever been done before that. I think that might have been the impetus for doing it, and then they started doing it in the NBA. When we made the Phil Kessel deal, we talked about this. We said, all right, what about if our pick is a real high pick? And we were like, no, our team's pretty good. Like, at Christmas time, we were like 6 games over 500. We weren't going to pick first or second or third. We were going to pick like 14th. And then we had the 18-wheeler going off the cliff. We extended the coach. Like, everything was going the right way. And then everything went south after Christmas. So I would lottery protect that pick. I wouldn't change getting Phil Kessel. I thought Phil was really good for us. But the price ended up being too high.
We'll leave it there. The book, we look forward to reading it. Burke's Law, A Life in Hockey. It's on shelves now. Plenty of time to get it for a holiday gift.
Hey, Scotty, one thing. It's not a kid's book. Like, there's a lot of adult language in there.
Okay.
So if you're thinking about putting it under the Christmas tree for a 12-year-old, don't.
Okay. All right. Perfect. All right. Maybe the 12-year-old can get it for mom or dad. We'll leave it at that. We'll do the flip. Thanks for this, Berkey, and we'll talk to you next week. Always look forward to it.
Thanks, guys. Sorry you lost me there.
No problem. Brian Burke of the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. And again, the book is Burke's Law, A Life in Hockey. Brian Burke with Stephen Brunt. Now, Silent Vic came pouring into the studio 20 minutes ago during Hughes' update. And he said that I had like an out-of-body experience, Ziggy, when you were telling your Ron Wilson, Phil Kessel story in the last segment. So listen to what happened here. I don't even know what I'm about to hear. All I've been told is this is audio that has to be played. What happened?
And that was it. Because Phil would take long shifts. Even
say that again.
And that was it. Because Phil would take long shifts. Even
do I laugh like that?
I don't know. I've never listened to your laugh before. What? I mean, I'm listening to you on the show, but I don't log your laughs and rate them.
Well, apparently these guys behind the scenes do.
You can't do anything behind the glass. You don't know what goes on behind the glass. You don't even want to know. I don't want to know.
You know what? They got an entire folder.
It's a whole different world back there. We have no clue what goes on.
They got an entire folder of all of our screw-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no doubt that these things have been circulated around the building.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if other shows have the same thing. And it's like trading in the complete and total screw ups. Listen to that. I'm never going to live that down. That's going to find its way into the show.
I will say, though, there are some laughs that can be annoying. I know there's people out there, they've heard laughs, and they just can't deal with it. There's lots of listeners.
Could a laugh, can a laugh ruin
yes.
a first date?
Yes.
Can a laugh ruin, like you might have thought.
Isn't there a Seinfeld episode where
he dates
and the laugh sounds like Elmer Fudd, right?
Oh, just cheese.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
He's so taken aback.
He's so taken aback. He can't.
But she's like great. She's gorgeous. The date's going great. And then she laughs and Seinfeld can't do it. I guarantee you our listeners have dealt with that before. 100%.
Text us to 59590. Has a laugh. Has somebody's squeaky, squawky laugh ruined a date?
Away.
Just, you think you've got it? I found the one. You're planning the marriage in your mind 20 minutes into that introductory coffee. And then...
You think it's going so well.
You think you're funny, you're charming, and the laugh. The laugh comes out. We'll take your text to 59590. Adnan Virk is going to join us. Now, we victimized him into being a part of this Sheep Kiefer conversation on multiple occasions.
He probably drinks it. He's healthy, eh?
No, he's healthy. Is. I didn't say when he's healthy. There's no way. There's no way he drinks Sheep Kiefer. Unless he mixes it with stuff.
I bet you he's had kefir before in his life. Maybe not sheep, but he's had the cow.
The whole of this started because one day on FaceTime in a commercial break, I saw you drinking something that looked like milk. And I was simply going to say to you, don't drink dairy in the middle of a show because your voice will catch. You'll get like that stuff, right? And then you say, oh, no, it's sheep kefir and blah, blah. And then we got into a long conversation about it. Anyway, we ended up making a bet on the Kansas City-Buffalo game on Monday. Hugh and I took the Bills. You and Silent Vic put your beards on the line. You took Kansas City. Kansas City obviously won. So Hugh, who's far more nervous about this than I am, if I got to drink the equivalent of sour milk here, I'll chase it with something and it'll be fine. I'm saving a little bit of the coffee that I have. I'll save myself. But we are going to do the Sheep Kiefer drink in 15 minutes. Adnan Virk will join us for the next segment. He'll hang around for the Sheep Kiefer. Hook him, right? Just hooking the listener. It's all ahead.
Oh, yeah. Adnan
Virk, next. Getting some text to 59590 about how laughs can ruin first dates. And it all stemmed from this an hour ago on this program when apparently I laughed like I've never laughed before.
And that was it. Because Phil would take long shifts. Even
I don't think I could do that again if I tried, Ziggy. And then we've got Seinfeld, of course.
Elmer Fudd.
The Elmer Fudd laugh.
I didn't know those little things were garlic. I thought they were peanuts.
the look on Jerry's face after that.
Oh, my goodness.
That's when it was over. Graham in Scarborough, I was dating a girl for a few weeks, and then the first night that she slept over, I woke up at 3 a.m. and she was snoring so loudly I couldn't get over it. I broke up with her a few days later, never told her why. I just said it wasn't working out.
Oh, the snoring is bad, though. Well, the snoring, I can understand the snoring over the laugh. No?
Well,
snoring can be bad. If you're a light sleeper, the snoring can be not pleasant. I'm sorry, but I'm okay. I'm more okay with having an issue with the snoring than the laugh. But what do you say to someone? Like, if someone has a bad laugh,
just said it's not working.
Do you tell them?
You can't, because it's like a sneeze. That's how you do it. You ever heard somebody sneeze and it's like, eee-chee. Like, whereas other people, it's just their face would explode. Their eyeballs would blow out of the front of their head.
So you can't say anything.
Well, I don't care. Well, I mean, what are you going to do? Make them change their laugh? That's how it is. I mean, that's...
You're telling me a person can't change their laugh?
I think I fake laughed. I think that's a fake... I think I fake laughed.
I think
laughed.
It's a fake laugh, too. But if you had a problem with my laugh, I hope you say something to me.
I would. But I would
change it. I would turn it off.
I think what happened there is I didn't like your story very much, but I felt the need to laugh, so I threw that one. Adnan Virk.
That was a sympathy laugh.
That was a sympathy laugh for a bad story. Adnan Virk is with us. Sorry it's off the rails again, and you have to come on the radio and save us.
No, listen, speaking of off the rails, I just watched the video of Ziggy hitting 90. I mean, this is fantastic. I mean, one thing I see is Sammy Sosa trying to swing in the cage, and clearly the years have not been good to Sammy. And then all of a sudden, Ziggy comes in there, no problem at all, bat flip, slow motion. Want me to pitch next? I mean, this is the highlight of my day here. This is unbelievable.
Adnan. Yeah, but you know how, Adnan, you've been in the business a long time. You know how TV works. There was, especially not live TV, there was heavy editing there. He swung and missed at like 90 pitches, maybe 91 before we.
Well, that is true. You guys, I think you guys showed like two. He didn't even show a miss. Actually, I think he showed twice. He fouled pitches off, and then he just smoked 90. So you're right. The miracle of editing. We didn't see all the swing and misses. But congrats, Ziggy. That's impressive.
Thanks, bud. Thanks, buds. I hit more than I expected, and I decided if I was going to hit a decent one. Good contact, which I did. I wanted to do the bat flip, but I was worried I was going to hit one of the lights in the ceiling. So I gave it the kind of weak toss in front of me. But I wanted to do a huge bat flip, but we'll have to wait.
Adnan, he hit a line drive that would have cleared Jose Altuve leaping, might have been caught by a leaping DJ LeMahieu. But he put one over second base that would have gone
a whole all-star team together.
Yeah, he put one over the second baseman's head that was legit, and I was impressed. And he also made contact with 101 miles an hour. They jacked it up another 10, 11 miles per hour. It's impressive. I
104, I struck out.
Like, I got blown out of the water on this bet. I wanted to come on the radio the next morning and pitch a fit. And make up some kind of, well, here's why it happened and it's not fair, I got screwed. I couldn't even do that. I couldn't even argue against it. He nailed it, much to his credit.
And the big news now is the Sheep Kaffir makes another appearance, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, and you're just like,
this isn't going away.
Well, and that was over a Monday bet we made over the Kansas City Bills game, where Ziggy and Silent Vic took Kansas City and they were going to shave their beards if the Bills won. And Hugh and I, because hashtag Bills Mafia, local team, like, we finally want to believe in Buffalo after 20 years of New England dominating that division. Well, we put our money where our mouth was on the Bills, and now we're going to pay the price and drink something that's come out of a sheep. So,
oh man, I feel bad that Hugh got roped into this as well. But I mean, listen, the captain must go down with the ship. Yes. At least misery loves company in this case.
Absolutely. All right, the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? You know, I've made the argument in the past that the Green Bay Packers under Mike McCarthy never fully maximized Aaron Rodgers' potential. That one Super Bowl win didn't feel like enough. He's Jerry Jones's hire. Mike Nolan takes over as defensive coordinator. They effectively overhaul the coaching staff, as you typically do when you hire a new head coach. And now you've got players who've apparently been grumbling but agreed to keep it internal for a number of weeks, now coming out publicly that Dak's done for the year and the team is 2-4. They're turning the ball over left, right, and center on offense. They do score when they don't turn it over, but they're turning the ball over left, right, and center on offense, and they can't stop a thing on defense. I'll tell you this, Adnan, whatever this amounts to, when the Cowboys are a circus, it's never-ending entertainment.
Yeah, especially for a Cowboys hater, like, which is everybody, unless you're a Dallas Cowboys fan. So we got our wish now with the level of incompetence that we're seeing. And I guess what's so shocking about it, boys, is just that they had an excellent draft. You look at their team a season ago and you said, okay, they're real underachievers, but the talent's all there, particularly on offense. You go, okay, when you've got Dak and Zeke and Amari Cooper and what it's been for years, a staunch offensive line, you know, you've got playmakers, and that's what you need in this league. You've got to have guys who are breakaway talents who can be electrifying when need be. And so the real shock of this year is that even before Dak got hurt, they were yet to get rolling. And last year, the excuse was just, well, Jason Garrett's a bad coach. He doesn't maximize talent. He's a career underachiever. He's committed to 8-8 no matter what the team is. So I would have thought, hey, Mike McCarthy comes in. He's won a Super Bowl with the Packers. This automatically is an upgrade. Yeah, this is an 11-win team. Peter King, notable NFL authority, had the Cowboys as the number one seed in the NFC this year. Not winning the Super Bowl, but he said, oh, they're the number one team in the NFC. I'm like, all right, most of us felt like they're definitely winning the division and could be one of the best teams in the league. To be this catastrophically bad, and it's not just Dak, as we all know. Yeah, he was playing terrific. But as you mentioned, Scotty, it's this defense that's like a sieve. I mean, they can't stop anybody. And this division, I believe the worst division winner ever was the Chargers, were 7-9. I have to double check this.
The Seahawks were too, and the year Beast Mode broke out. Yep.
Okay, that's right. So we're definitely, like, I mean, I was trying to trick myself into thinking, okay, we'll get an 8-8 division champion. But no, like, it's going to be a sub-500 division champion. And my Eagles, at least the last couple weeks, they've scored points. I mean, they lost 30-28 to the Ravens. I'm shocked it was only a 2-point game. At least Carson Wentz and company scored points. But you can see the Eagles win this division, as stupid as it sounds, at 6-9-1. Like, that's how bad it is right now. And for the Cowboys specifically, I'm just shocked it's this bad. I really am, because I thought, okay, with that kind of talent, we'll be fine. I guess I didn't pay enough attention to how bad this defense is, and the fact that McCarthy, I mean, just handing over as a signal caller, just he hasn't been nearly as good as we've seen in the past. I'm really surprised.
What did you think, or were you just as surprised with the players coming out and ripping the coaching staff? Like, that's the, for me, was I was really shocked at this point. Like, if this stuff's going to come out, why not come out the first couple weeks? Why? I understand they're losing now, but why now? And well, why
you,
don't the players,
you didn't like the anonymity either?
Yeah, that's what I was, yeah. I was gonna go with that next. Why not come out with who it is, who's coming?
I totally agree, Ziggy. Like, there's nothing more frustrating than anonymous sources. Like, if you put your name to it, then fine, be a big boy about it. And you can do it, by the way, in a way that I don't think puts your entire coaching staff on blast. I think you could always spin things in a positive manner. Just say, listen, we're not doing a good enough job, and that goes for all of us. That goes for the coaching staff. That goes for us. And like, okay, like, you can already make your point publicly, and then go to Mike McCarthy and the coaching staff, and hopefully you have a strong enough relationship. There's got to be team leaders in the team who are designated as such, who can go to the coach and say, listen, there's what's not happening here. But for it to come out like totally unprepared, they don't teach, they don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly, they just aren't good at their jobs, like, that's fighting words. Like, if I'm Mike McCarthy, I'm like, I'm furious. This is a guy who's 9 playoff appearances in 13 seasons, 125 wins, obviously a Super Bowl with the Packers. I mean, this is, again, it's stunning that it's to this level of disarray. As for it coming out now, well, listen, I think if the team is 500 or a slight winning record, you go, okay, well, the coaching staff isn't great, but I guess we'll work through it. We have enough talent, fellas. We'll make this work. But once the, you know, once the yarn starts to unravel a little bit, then I think people feel like they can start to kind of jump aboard and take their shot. So I'm not surprised by the timing of it. I'm disappointed like you when people are anonymous about it. And I'm just surprised with the whole issue, because I don't know how you really turn it around. Like, this isn't one of those that you go, all right, this will fire up the coaching staff to do a better job. It goes the other way. You know, the coaches bury the players take it personally, and then all show you kind of thing. I don't think the coaches say, all right, this is the kind of motivation we needed, our players to anonymously call us out in public. This will spark us.
Adnan Virk is with us from MLB Network, the NHL Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Los Angeles Dodgers, are they the rich version of the Tampa Bay Rays?
It's a funny way of putting it, because you're right. Andrew Friedman built a team involving the Rays, obviously 06-14, goes to the Dodgers, and with that heavy blend of analytics, astute scouting, grabbing players who are undervalued, and of course, drafting players who are real talents as well. And now the only difference is he has a ton of money. I think in many ways you could say, yes, that the Dodgers are the richer version of the Rays. In some ways, Andrew Friedman's job is harder, because when you don't have any money, everyone praises you no matter what, because they say, well, listen, I got the 28th payroll in baseball. I can't believe we're even competitive. I can't believe we won 90 games. But when you're the bad boys of the block and you've got all that money, they say, hey, listen, there's no excuses. You better win, because you're supposed to be so smart and we're giving you all these resources. What's interesting is the Dodgers' payroll has actually gone down the last few years. Yes, it's still bloated, but it's not as high as the Yankees. It's just not the highest in baseball. It's actually gone down by $60 million over the last 4 years. But the way that they put this situation together, top to bottom, is nothing short of impressive. And, you know, it's not fun to call it the Andrew Friedman World Series because who cares about executives? But it really is the case. And I wouldn't say it's a win-win. I mean, he's got to win for the Dodgers. If the Rays won, that would definitely sting. But you talk about favorites in sports. These are both number one seeds, but the Dodgers were the prohibitive favorite going into last night, and they showed the Rays why they're the better team. And there's no more stronger storyline right now in sports than Clayton Kershaw and his redemption. It is well documented that he has not been the same pitcher in the playoffs that he has in the regular season. I think part of that is bad luck. Part of that's bad timing. You know, you look at so-called great big game pitchers. Madison Bumgarner never pitched on short rest. Came out of the bullpen famously in Game 7 of that World Series, but never started on short rest. Justin Verlander is thought of as a great big game pitcher. Started once on short rest last year, didn't go well. Kershaw has done it six times. So more often than not, they've gone to him on short rest, and it just hasn't worked out, and he stays in the game too long, right? Innings 1 through 5, his ERA in the playoffs is 3.59. Innings 6 on, it's 7.31. So they've got to realize, like, hey, just you can't trust the guy to throw 100 pitches and expect him to go to the 7th. And yesterday, very economical, very efficient. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts on 78 pitches in 6 innings. That's about as good a script as you could write if you're a Kershaw fan, and the offense is more than enough. That's the biggest reason, guys, why I was picking the Dodgers in 6. Their offense has no holes, whereas for the Rays, they've had 2 guys hitting. A Rosarena hit .383 in the NLCS. The rest of the team's hitting a .185. Like, Manuel Margot hit a couple home runs, but really it's been one guy in a Rosarena, and the Dodgers are not going to let him beat them.
And then I don't want to suggest that anything that you said there wasn't interesting, but while you were talking...
The sheep kefir made an appearance? What happened?
I opened...
It made an appearance.
...the jug... of sheep kefir, and I sniffed the bottle and I almost got sick, and that made Hugh do the very same thing, and he coughed.
Holy geez. This is wow.
So we're about to pay our bet. So if you're just joining us, Kansas City beat Buffalo on Monday afternoon or early Monday evening. Ziggy and Silent Vic put their beards on the line taking Kansas City. Hugh and I agreed we would drink this crap that Ziggy drinks for fun.
Ugh.
Sheep kefir, yeah. If Kansas City beat Buffalo, and of course that happened. What's the rule here? Do we have to chug this, or do we...
Slow.
No.
Nice and slow.
I don't know what's worse, chugging it or sipping it.
Adnan, I got to tell you, I'm scared.
Adnan chooses slow or fast.
Oh, no, don't.
Adnan, you dodged a bullet on this one. Oh, my God.
I bet you Adnan drinks kefir.
Do you drink kefir, Adnan?
No, I'm not a kefir guy. That was an incorrect assumption from Ziggy. I would never touch it.
He's healthy.
I have some sympathy right now for you guys.
Did you know what kefir was?
They had that chip challenge a while ago, that one chip challenge, that there's this chip that's like, well, why would anyone even make this thing? I did that on the air. I took a good chunk, and I'm like, I couldn't recover for hours. Like, people are like, oh, it's so funny. Like, it's not funny. It's not funny to see somebody in pain, and that's what's about to happen to both you, Hugh, and Scotty Mac. This is a terrible situation.
Are we allowed to plug our noses while we drink this?
No. No plugging.
It's the smell.
Yep. This smells like milk that went bad, I don't know, about a month ago.
I can't promise. So, Silent Vic, I mean this. You got to be ready, Ziggy, whatever. I can't promise I'm going to be able to host.
If you go slow or fast, I think the option is fast. You just want to get it done. No?
Are we doing this together?
Yeah, we will. Oh. So hit the drum roll. Hugh, in 3, 2, and 1.
Scotty is choking it down right now.
There's chunks in it.
It's all over his mustache.
This is death.
It tastes
I think he's plugging his nose for
Hugh's
sure.
He's having problems. Oh, my God.
Ziggy, this tastes
it's
like...
It's the aftertaste.
This tastes like liquid sweat sock. It's disgusting.
What? You do this for fun.
Yes, I do.
I'm going to be... every time I burp all day today, like just like a... I'm going to taste this. Hugh might actually barf. Kefir is
a fermented milk drink similar to a thin yogurt that is made from kefir grains, a specific type of
Mesophilic? Philiac?
Mesothelioma?
Symbiotic culture. The drink originated in North. I don't know what that is. I think it's from Russia, right?
It originated in a sheep. Oh, my God.
It's Russia. Ziggy, it's originally from Russia.
Ziggy, what
You can get it from a cow, a goat, or a sheep.
Ziggy, what part of the sheep is this from?
Oh.
Yeah.
Awful. Oh, you don't want to know.
It has chunks in it. It's disgusting.
Oh. Yeah, there is some. You got to really shake it up, but you're still going to get the odd chunk in there.
I drank my entire cup, Ziggy. Look. There you go. Add in.
That's impressive.
I'm okay as long as I don't exhale.
Listen, I just hope it doesn't come out at some inopportune moment, Scotty. This is my fear now. You think you're over it, and all of a sudden it's going to come back up. Let's pray that doesn't happen.
Adnan, we'll send some of this stuff to you, okay?
Yes. Please send a shipment here to New Jersey. I would love to.
Our assistant producer, Hayden Mathewson, took video of it, so we will post it on our Twitter and Instagram.
Just disgusting.
You're getting protein, calcium, phosphorus, vitamin B12, riboflavin.
No more bets, okay? We've learned our lesson. No more bets. Ziggy,
you're healthier. You're healthier now. That's all that matters.
Adnan, it's good to hear your voice. If I'm here next week, I'll look forward to talking to you. If not, I died by sheep. There you go.
Godspeed, boys.
Adnan Burke of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast. If I sound congested right now, it's because I refuse to clear my throat, swallow, or anything. Have you finished it, Hugh?
Yeah, I muscled through it.
All right.
Not good.
We'll recover here for 3 minutes and see how we're doing when we come back. Liz from Mississauga texting to 59590. You guys are hilarious with the sheep kefir stuff, but it's just yogurt. Suck it up.
Oh.
No, it's not just yogurt.
I like my yogurt with berries in it, maybe some banana. There were chunks of I don't know what.
That was
in that.
But you had the line of the day. That is liquid sweat socks.
Yeah.
That's a good description, actually. Fairly accurate.
Ziggy, all credit to you, man. I don't know how you do that.
Silent
a couple
Vic,
times a week, guys, I do it.
Silent Vic and Hayden both thought they were going to be sick when they tried it during the commercial break, and Lance Kennedy, the technical producer of Good Show, saw enough to know that he didn't want to try it.
Lance got his nose right in there, though. Oof. He's regretting
Give Lance a little shot.
Well,
there's like half a jug
force
left.
Force anybody to do anything.
Yeah, don't throw that out. I'll take it when you guys are done with it.
Well, yeah, why not? 6-8 months from now, it doesn't go bad, obviously.
Can't get any worse than that.
My favorite part of all of this is that Hugh is actually legitimately angry. Legitimately angry. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good show's next. Happy hump day.
Diddly poo.